The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga, and it's Tuesday, actually. The show is going to get released on Wednesday. But this week actually started for me. I went to the dentist on Monday, did my taxes today, all this grown-up stuff. And now I'm back with my favorite person to talk about not-so-grown-up stuff. Japanese pro wrestling, it is. Dylan, did you also do so much grown-up stuff like I did?
Well, as someone who's yet to have grown up, effectively, and I don't think that day is coming anytime soon, I have to say I did not, unfortunately. Well, to be fair, our tax times are totally different, so I did mine in, like, February, and you're doing yours now. So, you know, I'm a little bit behind you or ahead of you, whichever way you want to call it. But as of now, that may be the only time I do adulting things in my life. Otherwise, it's all about crazy stuff, pretty much. Also, professional wrestling, Japanese professional wrestling, to be specific, and assorted other sports, such as you can see in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics going on. Even though it's 2021, they did not change the number. They had to keep things symmetrical and things like that. I've been watching a lot of the Olympics lately, to be honest with you. And usually, I have to admit here, as an American, you do not have this problem. As a German, a European, in the great country of Germany, in America, they have made it very hard to follow the games live when it comes to the channel situation on our TV.
Oh.
I have cable, and there are so many channels, and 90% of the games are on Peacock. I know if you're a wrestling fan, if you like WWE, I know you're a fan of that, or you just have some kind of version of that. But they've also put the Olympics on Peacock, which is a pay service, which people are not happy about, including me there. So I've been watching a lot of that, though. I've been watching a lot of unique events. You were telling me off the air you were watching skateboarding.
Yes.
And you were so impressed by that when it happened. We both have our history, our past in skateboarding, very minor, but a past nonetheless. And I know you were impressed by that. Yes.
Dylan off the air that the history of my skateboarding experience is engraved on my forehead. Actually set up a picture to prove that.
He proved it. He's not lying. He is not making this up, people. But I do have to shout out Grandpa Ken. He was, long ago in the 1970s, 55, 60 years ago, or whenever that was. That's probably a little older. It's like 40-something. But back when he was in school, he was a state winner in the state of Illinois on his swimming team.
Wow.
He was an accomplished swimmer. On there. I played different sports. I never swam. I never won state either in any of them. But he is always into the diving and the swimming and stuff like that. So he was very excited to watch Team USA in their foray right now. You look at the medal count as we're recording right now. It'll probably change by the time it's put up. But as we're recording, Germany, your home country, has moved into the top 10 with 5 medals, and 2 of which are gold.
Yeah. I think they come from dressage riding. Germany's usually very good at that. But I'm not a huge fan of this sport, you know. I'm a little bit disappointed in the German football team, actually. But the regular season is coming up, and a lot of teams pulled their players. So they only went to Tokyo with like 15 players. And 2 of them have seen red cards already in the first 2 games. So they're down to 13 players. And it's not looking very good, but luckily there's some other stuff. Just like you mentioned, the skateboarding, I was so impressed by this 13-year-old Japanese girl by the name of Momiji Nishiya, who won the gold medal in the Olympics. And the silver medal went to a Brazilian girl, also 13 years old, which is absolutely crazy. It's easier, actually, to watch in Germany, but right now it's in the morning hours. And usually I don't really... The habit of watching sports is usually in the afternoon or in the evenings.
Yeah.
You know, and lots of the contests are in the morning hours in Germany, but it's easier to watch here. Actually, there's this fee you have to pay in Germany for the public law channels, and most of the Olympics are on these channels. So you pay this fee and you just can watch however much you want, and they put a lot up on YouTube. I watched some taekwondo, watched some judo. I really like to watch judo.
Judo is really entertaining to watch.
Yes, it really is. So shout out to Mark Pickering on here.
Yeah, of course. Yes, our colleague who is clearly way ahead of us on the totem pole, yes. covering the Olympics. He's surpassed all of wrestling. So congratulations to Mark for doing great work. I'm always following his Twitter. He's super on top of things, yes. Too. With judo. But judo is a great sport to watch. Taekwondo as well. All the martial arts ones are always fun. Overall, right now, USA is leading the overall medal count with 25. Although you mentioned your football team for Germany, no contest, not nearly as disappointing as the Team USA basketball team. Disgracing themselves with multiple losses heading into the play. Even before the game started, they were already losing in terms of the practice games. And then they lost their first game already to France, and they do have their best players. In fact, they flew people over because the NBA crunched the season so they could get people to the Olympics, all the stars and stuff, but the finals lasted long enough to where the two finals teams, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Phoenix Suns, they couldn't send their players. So three guys from the finals flew over after the finals straight to Japan to get to the games. It was like, and they're still losing. All the stars are there, or most of the stars. There's like LeBron James, he has his movie, Space Jam 2, so he couldn't be there, and some guys were injured, but this is a pretty star-studded lineup Team USA has, and they're ruining everything. Thankfully, my country of support, China, they're third overall second overall in the overall medals, tied for second.
Depends on how you look at it. The overall medal score, USA is leading, and in the gold medal scores, Japan is leading, actually.
Yes, that's right. Japan is leading with 10 gold medals, and USA and China are tied with 9. And, you know, China has won a variety of sports. We had weightlifting a lot. We had the synchronized diving. We had fencing, women's fencing. And a lot of, surprisingly, this isn't something you would probably think of with China, but our shooting events are very strong. I was watching
yes,
Yongbyon.
I saw a lot of memes over Americans winning shooting events.
Yes, well, that didn't happen this time as much because China had it on lock right now. See, we nobody knew about that. That's not something that's known or associated with China and their weapon foray. Same with fencing. Like China and Hong Kong both won fencing gold medals. So big stuff there, and all the countries. I mean, I don't know if you. I'm sure you didn't. To be honest, I'm sure you didn't care about this part. But we actually watched the Olympic opening ceremony where there was dancers. They were doing stuff with wood, and all the countries walked out. It was like an hour of countries just walking. Pretty much.
Yeah.
I give props. I don't know if they have any medals, but props to the Portugal team because they had by far the best entrance. Because everybody walks out, all the countries, they're very, like, low-key, you know. They're all, you know, shy and stuff. But Portugal was like, they were hooting and hollering, dancing, chanting, Portugal, Portugal. I was like, yeah, let's go, baby, with that one. And it was so boring. So then we needed somebody to add some excitement. But yes, right now China is and USA and Japan. Japan, you have to think, would have a good chance to be a big-time winner here with all of – you know, because they automatically qualify for all their events, being the host country. That's how it works at all the Olympics, not just this one. So they do have a chance to do some big things, and they've done great with the gold medal here. And I know if they had pro wrestling as an Olympic event, I do think that they have to be the favorite to take the gold.
They really would be. Well, if there are still some wrestlers that didn't catch COVID, that is, Let's see, Portugal. Did they win a medal yet? Doesn't look like they did.
But they had the best entrance. Isn't that what we want?
That's an entrance is very important. Yes,
but that's a total lie. But I want to make them feel better. Like I said, you're not being nice.
But on the topic,
on
the topic of professional wrestling, quote unquote, the hot ticket right now in Japan. It's at least what the LA Times said. COVID-19 actually in Tokyo is a big issue. They just today had a new record of new infections of almost 3,000 just in Tokyo, just the Tokyo area. And there's, of course, more in the overall country of Japan. And, well, in recent weeks, a lot of wrestling shows have been impacted by this. For example, Shuji Ishikawa, of course, had COVID, so they had to move Shotaro Oshino to the Jake Lee title defense. Kasayashi recently was diagnosed with COVID, so he had to be taken off the Great Show recently. The newest thing that came out just today was that Chicharito Shoki of 2AW, Active Advanced Pro Wrestling, has COVID, and there are 7 close contacts within the company, so they had to cancel their August 1st show in 2AW Square. And also, Shoki recently wrestled on a double shot of Big Japan Pro Wrestling and won their Yokohama 6-man tag team title. So he teamed with Yasufumi Nakanoe and Yuji Kobayashi, taking on fellow 2AW wrestler Tatsuya Hanami, Hideyoshi Kamitani, and Yuya Aoki. So we'll see if there is anything coming for Big Japan, because Daichi Yoshimoto also down with COVID. So it's really hitting pro wrestling left and right. And I don't really see an end of that until the rollout of the vaccine is fully advanced in Japan, but that doesn't seem to be the case. W.H. Park talked about that on his recent post-Barista show he did with Wating. And
that's not how you pronounce his name. It's Waiting. Don't be like Nick Gage. Don't be like Nick Gage.
Well, actually, Wei on post-Barista said that he pronounced it Wah.
That's a traditional pronunciation.
I know.
But that became a meme almost in wrestling. And I want to hesitate from adding to meme culture right now. I think it's a wave that has taken over Twitter, and I have to fight against it a little bit. But yes, I very much enjoyed that show with WH.
Yes, it was a great show, and WH picked up on a lot of things that I was also going to pick up on this show, so I'm not going to repeat what he said, but said a few different details here on this show. Definitely had to talk about the COVID spike in Tokyo, and we'll talk about the show too that was heavily impacted by the current state of emergency and how that all went down then. But yeah, that's the situation in Japan. Before we get to New Japan Pro Wrestling, that's going to be at the end of the show, I want to talk about something that's going to impact me as a professional wrestling fan, because even in these COVID-19 times, Dylan, there is a little bit of hope. And I actually have 2 tickets to WXW shows in August. First one being in Oberhausen and the second one being in Bielefeld. And it was announced this week, too, that former All Japan Pro Wrestling Junior Heavyweight Champion Akira Francesco will be in the upcoming Catch Grand Prix for WXW that's coming in September, where I, of course, also have tickets for. And I really thought that this was a cool announcement, because Akira Francesco is not really a guy that became a household name in Europe before he went to Japan. He was much more of a name that was only well known to those who would like watch the Rising Sun promotion in Italy and stuff like that. So just within the real dedicated hardcore European wrestling fans, he was a name. But now he's coming to WXW, and I believe with all his training that he got in Japan, he will be a great asset for the Catch Grand Prix and add a completely different wrinkle to this tournament and be a different name just for all the WXW guys, the homegrown talent, and whoever they get into the tournament. Akira Francesco should be a great spoil to work with, and just a breath of fresh air in these difficult times, because matches can get repetitive if you only have the same core roster going and are not really able to bring in foreigners.
I hope you have a great time, man. That sounds really cool that you're getting to go to these shows with August coming in. Great for Akira that he does get to go in. And WXW is really one of the, I don't want to say the founders, but definitely one of the pillars of the European wrestling scene in Germany. Very popular. You know, even before there was that big European wrestling boom, WXW was around and having a lot of guys that would go on to become big stars. So to see Akira get his chance in a promotion like that, that's well-respected, been around for a long time, has a following, that's a great thing for him.
Yeah, WXW witnessed both the rise and the fall of the Britwrest scene. So, still around.
And predated it, even. You know,
predated it, yes. That is true. Yeah, and many fans were wondering why Akira Francesco lost the All Japan Junior Heavyweight Championship in his first defense to Sugi now. So apparently the reason is that he is going back to Europe, and who knows when he'll be able to return to Japan. So I guess All Japan knew about that. That is my understanding, and that is my guess of it. All Japan knew about him returning to Europe, but they wanted to give him something because he was working so hard. So they gave him the tournament victory and also one short championship run. And you could see it on all of his tweets and all the photos that were posted on numerous websites and stuff. He was so proud of what he had accomplished, and he was so happy with all the with all the focus that he was getting recently. And I guess for him it was just a great ride to just be the champion for a couple of days. I don't know. What do you think about the title change?
Well, you know, I really don't know the personal circumstances of him or what's going on in his life or who knew what before going in. Obviously, when it first happened, I was really excited to see him win the title. I thought he was a great breath of fresh air on top of the division. I was really happy to see him get it. Him losing, I was completely baffled by at face value. But, you know, like I said, there could have been life circumstances that we just don't know about at the end of the day. But, you know, I mean, I feel for him because he was at by far the highest push of his career. So, like I said, maybe there's some explanation we don't know about. At face value, it seems nuts. Like, honestly, how things have gone on. But like I
the
said,
entire there could title be some situation seems nuts right now.
Yeah, exactly. It just very, very questionable all around. But there may be an explanation, so I don't want to be too hard on it.
Maybe the explanation is that All Japan also know that Koji Omoto, being the junior heavyweight champion, is just a meme right now. So they had to figure out something else.
That he's an open weight now.
He's
on his own path at the moment. But, you know, Sugi winning, that's kind of cool. You know, he's a guy that I know we've watched forever. You know, he was really famous when I first started watching wrestling, or, you know, very popular, at least, among Western fans. Because they were like, oh, this
show's a great guy. There was one show where we went over all of his gimmicks.
There's a lot. Long story short on that. But he's very cool, you know, in a bit of an older stage now, more of a veteran. Having him do something like this is very good. It shows that he was right to get out of 0-1, which, I mean, he was already right, but still, he was a guy that he has a lot of talent, can do a lot of different things, and is a very spectacular performer to this day. So he adds a little bit of a freshness as well to the title scene. You know, hopefully everything goes good with Akira, and he finds success wherever he goes. I don't know if this is a long-term change going back to Europe. Like I said, it's just a lot up in the air, but hopefully Sugi can do good with the title as well. I did wish, honestly, as a fan, that Akira could have had a little bit more of a run with it, but Sugi is a good champion, so let's hope it all works out.
Yeah. I thought the match was pretty good. I thought they did a lot of cool high flying. That is what the match was really based on. There was no real structure of a story going in the match. It was just purely high flying. But for what it was, I really enjoyed the match. And I put on a little thread on Twitter too. Just compare Akira Francesco from last year, where he faced Susumu Ikusuka, to this Akira Francesco that faced Sugi more than 1 year later, and you'll clearly see how much he has grown within this 1 year, not just physically, but also as a wrestler. He has grown very much so. And I really think that when he returns to the junior heavyweight seat, he will and should get a lengthy run with the junior championship.
Yeah, well, that remains to be seen, but I've always liked his work. I think he's a great asset, for however long he's around for. So good on him. Hopefully he can come back safe and sound and do some great things when he does return to All Japan.
Since we're just on this show, it was the Summer Action Series 2021 Day 5 show with the Atsushi Aoki Memorial match as well from July 22nd, which was headlined by the Triple Crown match. Jake Lee defeated Shotaro Ashino in 20 minutes, 25 seconds. Dylan, what did you think about the main event of that show?
I thought it was pretty good. The whole show was honestly, I really wasn't a fan of any match on that show. I mean, like that semi-main event, I greatly preferred Akira versus Iwamoto the month before.
Mm-hmm.
This Spotfest style is not my favorite, and I noticed a lot of Akira selling. It felt like to me, like I said, I've hesitated from making this comparison because I said this on the Patreon show I did about this because I feel like it's too easy. Like, oh, he does his finisher, so he's wrestling like him. Like, that's not really true, but in this match, he really gave me hard Osprey vibes with a lot of his selling. I like facial expressions he was doing, and I thought Sugi might not have been the one to bring out the best in him, even though I like both performers. I just didn't think it was a great matchup. The main event was good. I didn't think it was great, and I think a big problem is that it was really dry for me to watch this. There was no way Ashino was going to win the title, and like a lot of times, they did this really solid work. I thought, you know, it's not like it was poorly worked or anything. It was a basic kind of match, I felt like, basic layout with the limb work and things like that. But for a 20-minute match, it just felt like it was going on, you know, it felt like it was going nowhere. The one big moment was when Ashino was able to counter into the ankle lock, and I felt like there was a different energy for that moment, but then it kind of fizzled out pretty fast. I didn't think the crowd was too buying into this too much either. But, 700 people at Korakuen Hall, that's better than what New Japan could do. So right now, so that is one thing. But
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, but like I said, I think if I watched it in a vacuum, maybe I'd like it more. But I thought it was a solid match, 6 or 7 out of 10. I thought every match on that show, I went on the Patreon. It's like outside of one match, I think I graded every match 6 out of 10 on the show.
So. Yeah, I thought the match was pretty good too, but it clearly lacked in excitement because there was no way that Ashino would be defeating Jake Lee. And so all the submission spots were fine, but you just knew they wouldn't lead anywhere in this match. Kento Miyahara versus Koji Omoto, though, it was a match that I was really excited for, and it ended up being a match. And I gotta say, I was much more impressed with Koji Omoto versus Zeus from earlier in the month, which I thought was a much better open weight match, because Koji Omoto in that match really had to work a style that would get Zeus down to the mat, and which he did in this match pretty well. But the Kento Miyahara match, it was once again merely a Kento Miyahara match, and Koji Omoto showing up for some spots here, and that's just not what I'm expecting when I see these kinds of new singles matches popping up, that the guy just fits into the Kento Miyahara regular match structure, when you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't think anybody would even possibly disagree with that on the match. You know, you had the same spots you see in a lot of his matches, going outside, doing the headbutts, and stuff like that. You know, right away, they kind of told you, hey, this is Kento's match,
yeah,
and here's Iwamoto as well. But I will say, I have to be honest, I haven't liked any of his matches as open weight. I did not like that Zeus match at all.
Mm.
I thought Zeus totally no-sold a lot of his stuff and made him look weak. And
story of the match, actually, that he had to basically overcome all of that. And that's the story going forward with him as an open weight.
I hate this open weight as well. This feels to me like he was begging them, saying, oh, please make me a heavyweight. I'm tired of being this junior. I can't be a good ace for this division. We've seen it a bunch of times. Don't sell me out again and make me have another bad title reign. Please let me move to heavyweight. I'm much more interesting with this tag team I had with Jake Lee in the past, remember? please let me be a heavyweight. And then they said they didn't really want to, and then they were like, oh, okay, fine. And then nobody wants to sell for him now that he's a heavyweight or make him look good, and they just do their own thing because they don't really respect him as a heavyweight. So to me, I am not a fan of this open weight crap at all. I think it's a terrible – like, this to me is like a total dead zone for him to be in. But, I mean, what would he have done? On the other hand, if he was a junior heavyweight, what would he have done? You know,
well, he could go back to the All-Asia title. And the ceiling for open weights in All Japan, it's the Gaora TV Championship.
Well, I mean, maybe there's a long-term plan for this.
But actually, Dylan, the guy is as tall as Shotaro Oshino is.
Yeah. I know. Isn't it weird how that could be a thing? I've always said this. Like, his size isn't a problem, I don't think, at all. I mean, he's bigger than Oshino. I mean, like, if you look at his frame, he's either equal size or bigger. But, I mean, that's a problem for Oshino as well, on the other hand. But, to me, it's like, I always say this. If Zack Sabre could be a heavyweight in New Japan, anybody could be a heavyweight. Like, that clearly is not a problem. It's more so how they see you and how they label you. Mm. The fact that they went out of their way to label Oshino a heavyweight and him an open weight, I think is real a troubling sign if you're an Iwamoto fan, in my opinion. I will say this. I think any problems I have with his matches so far has not been because of him. I think he shows a lot of fire, even in that Kento match. When it came time to get going, I thought he did a really good job. And it was nice. I mean, it was a traditional Kento match, just kind of compacted into this 10 or 11 minutes that they wrestled. And I thought he showed a lot of fire in it. So I think he's trying to make this work. I just don't think the people around him are behind him for this.
Did you see Zuwama's singles matches that he had on that tour? He had one with Iwamoto and the other one with Kodama. What did you think about those?
I saw the one with Iwamoto. Again, I'm not really a big fan of these open weight matches. But, you know, Suwama looked pretty good. You know, at the same time, though, it's just like, I mean, he destroyed him with his chops, his big move.
Did?
Yeah. Iwamoto, you know, he kind of picked his spots a little bit. I thought he sold really well, made him look powerful and dominant and badass and stuff like that. Great fire. I appreciate Iwamoto's work. But as a match, I'm just a little not sold on this open weight thing. I think that kind of colored my vision. But, it was all right. But it didn't stand up.
I think you don't really know where this could be going because you don't expect something like that in All Japan because they usually have this clear-cut division between the heavyweights and the juniors being losing posts on all of the multi-man matches. Yeah. But I got to say, I actually like, now that I'm looking at it, I actually like the Zuwama versus Koji Omoto one better than the Zeus one because Koji Omoto got much more offense in the match. He even got his judo takedown in the Koko no Gejitsu he got in this match. Zuwama gave him more than Zeus did.
Yeah.
Let's see where this is going.
Yeah. He's a talented guy. Like, I hope the best for him.
Yeah, yeah. Except for that, pretty solid show, except for that.
It wasn't bad, but nothing stood out to me at all. I thought it was kind of a downer of a show, to be honest. I think the tag match with Stronghearts would have been better if T-Hawk hadn't have gotten injured. Onitsuka, he's a guy I like. I think he's done good things this year. At this match, I thought he was a little bit below the other three. I think if T-Hawk were there, they could have really popped off and had something big. But, you know, maybe that'll come. I think that's a big reason maybe why they kept the titles on Purple Haze.
They've been champions for a long time now.
Almost. You think this is the logical way to end it, too, would be a change. Yeah.
They've been champions for almost a year now.
They need to have Lindemann team up with one of the main stars and win those title. T-Hawk. It'll probably be Shima by the end of this.
No!
Yeah, that's right. He said, you thought you got rid of me with that junior title. Now I've worked my way into another one. But they have guys. You got T-Hawk, Irie. You know,
But Irie is in Purple Haze in All Japan.
That could be a huge storyline. Irie could turn on Purple Haze. Look at that.
If All Japan did storylines except for every once in a while, that could be a storyline.
It'll be what if they just repeated the Enfants turn just with Purple Haze? Everyone left Izanagi all alone.
And Zeus becomes a strong heart?
Yes. They all become strong, except for Izanagi. He's like he's the fallen hero. Just like him and Oshino can form a tag team.
Oh, yeah.
Or he could go missing again.
And come back as I don't know.
He could come back.
Black Tiger 8.
He could do that. I mean, he has a lot of gimmicks in his Tiger's Mask 2. He's a whole new person.
Actually, in Osaka Pro, there was a Tiger's Mask 2 already, so that gimmick is out. Yeah.
Eagle's Mask 2. There was a 2
of those, there right? There is an Eagle's Mask in JTO.
Well, he needs to come up with some other kind of mask. Yes.
On a more serious topic here, I really like the team of Den Tamura and Ryuki Honda on that show. I think they have a lot of fire underneath them, both very powerful rookies, and they teamed well together. Den Tamura with his spears, Honda with his avalanche slams. They really like those. They could be a challenger for the All-Asia Tag title too, but wondering if they still want to go with the Strong Hearts.
Honda's moving up the card. I don't know if he'll get the titles right away, but he's a guy that they clearly see something in. Yeah. He got the win in that match. I really enjoyed Aoyagi and Hayato as a team, actually. I thought they had really good teamwork. Played off the bigger guys well.
Yep.
And, yeah, I thought that was actually really solid. For a second match on the show, that was really good stuff, I thought. But, yeah, Honda, he's somebody to keep your eye on. I think that they have big plans for him going forward.
They're really good, too, of course. Yes, promising guys for the junior division down the line. Then they had a debut of Ryoma Tsukamoto. And this dude, he's actually from the Animal Hamaguchi Dojo, and he has been training there for 7 years, actually, I read on his profile. And this dude in his first match is already much better than the Saito brothers. You asked me on one of our recent shows what I thought about them, and I had only seen the one match they did against one another. They are incredibly robotic in everything that they do. And I don't know what they'll be able to do. It will take a long time for Jun and Rei Saito to even be remotely able to lead a match. That is why they are pairing them with veteran guys like Osamu Nishimura, Ryuichi Jikata, and Takao Omori on this show. And they are rarely having them wrestle one another. They're usually in tag teams together.
Yeah, they did have a match with each other, I'll be the Saito fan here. I like what they bring to the table stylistically. They have the sumo background.
Yeah, that's
cool. It was pretty cool. I'm not going to sit here and say that they're the greatest workers or anything like that. Clearly, I mean, look, they've had like 6 matches overall, probably. So I don't want to make any kind of judgments on them yet. But I've enjoyed their sumo stuff that they bring to the table, their stylistic stuff. But Tsukamoto, he seems like a guy that, you know, he could have been like a Big Japan trainee. He's short. And he's wide. That's the best way I can describe him. But he showed a lot of fire too in this match. I thought he looked the match. This match in particular was mostly built around him. Obviously, it's his debut. I thought he showed a lot of fire and worked really good with Omori. And it was good stuff. I thought
it was good stuff. It really was. But I guess that's it for All Japan for now. They will be coming back with the Odo tournament. We talked about that a couple of shows ago. That is on August 15. Doubleheader in Shinjuku Phase with 16 first round matches. And they'll be ending that tournament in Kuroken Hall on August 29th with the winner receiving a shot at the Triple Crown. And when we last talked about this tournament, we were both in agreement that Zuwama would be winning the tournament to have Jake Lee go over Zuwama. Is that still what you're thinking?
Yes. I don't see anything. Why not?
Why not? All right. Then on this show, you talked about the guys. We had the Strong Hearts on this show. We had Lindemann and Issei Onitsuka on this show. Onitsuka subbing for the injured T-Hawk. We talked about how he took the dive on the great version 1 show and landed right in the guardrails. And now, Great actually had their first G Pro Wrestling version 1 event, which was a show strictly devoted to regular pro wrestling, no UWF rules, just the pro wrestling aspect of their roster. And Dylan, what did you think about the show? Did you see the show?
Yeah, I did see the show. I do want to mention before that, they did have a UWF match, just a single match show.
I would actually talk about that after this one.
You'll talk about the one that happened first, after. Okay. Yes. That's fine. Yeah, the show was good. Honestly, I've liked everything I've seen from Great so far. They were in Osaka. I thought the arena was pretty nifty for a smaller place.
Yeah, it's the Azalea Taisho Hall. That's a place where a lot of indie companies and some Yoshi companies also run their shows.
Yeah, I think the most noteworthy thing was Onitsuka beating Shima in a singles match, which I was surprised by, and definitely
it was another middle finger to All Japan Pro Wrestling.
yeah, maybe that's what it was. Shima just lost. He's like, look, I wouldn't jump to anyone in that company, but for my guy, sure, I play ball. No
I mean,
problem.
That's what I took away from that.
To be fair, Shima did work double duty. On
he
show.
Did.
So maybe that's like his automatic out. I can lose, but only if I win first on the show.
Yeah, I don't know about this one because the scheduled match was Onitsuka against Kazayashi, but as I said, Kazayashi is out with COVID. So after the opening match on this show, where Shima and Shigeyori Irie beat Minoru Tanaka and Daijiro Matsui, Onitsuka came out and challenged Shima, and then they did this really long singles match too. It was a 15-minute singles match, and that was actually the longest singles match that I had seen Onitsuka in ever before, and I'm just browsing down his profile. I can't see a longer singles match that he ever had in his career, so it was great for him to go out there. He had one with Linderman in 2019 that was 14 minutes long, but no match that went over 15 now. I like the match. I'm just not sure if it was the right moment for Onitsuka to go over Shima, because he will be in a feud with Kazayashi, and obviously Kazayashi lost to him in that six-man tag on the Version 1 show early July. July 1st, yeah. Yes. Yeah, after the cutoff date, of course.
Except in Hawaii, by God.
Yes, and so you'd expect Kazayashi to get his win back in a singles match, but now Onitsuka has beaten Shima, and I don't know if that booking was so smart in the end.
Yeah, that's a good point, to be honest with you. It's hard to argue with what you just said there. I guess we'll have to see how it plays out. You're right that maybe this could have been built to as a bigger moment, but we don't know what's going on in the mind of Shima at the end of the day. If you have a chance to put a young guy over him, are you really going to risk waiting 2 months and then...
imagine the guy's backstage and Shima's saying, oh yeah, I'll lose to him. And they, what?
Yeah, they're like, whoa. I guess he has to win then, but you know, we'll figure out the rest later. We just got to do this now while he's still in a good mood or whatever.
Yeah, I actually really like the main event of that show. The tag team of Ryuichi Kawakami and Hayato Tamura, in my opinion, is a very, very good fit for both guys. I ended up tweeting that Great needs to establish a tag team title just for those two to win it. Two beefy guys just throwing around Linderman and Suma Watanabe in that match. Was a little long in the end, I thought, with 19 minutes, but it served its purpose to put over Hayato and Kawakami as a tag team, and if I was Great, I would be ready to sign this Hayato Tamura guy now.
Yes, he's very good. I was really impressed with Lindemann and Soma as a team. Lindemann, he's just on another level. I'd be like, yeah. I love everything he does. But Soma, he's a guy that's really worked hard and is showing his own goods that he's bringing to the table right now. I thought it was a good main event, too. A little too long. You were right a little bit there, but I thought that they did a great job. Honestly, to me, I like those guys, Kawakami and Tamura, but for me in that match, I really felt like the smaller guys were really making them look really good.
Sure.
There. So I really like them. Kawakami Tamura, good tag team potential, definitely would sign him. And we said this on the when we talked about that show, Tamura's a guy that they need to reach out to. He's the exact kind of person you want to sign. Great upside. Already is an experienced guy, even though he's not been around that long. He's done a lot of things for his age. He's a great guy to have on. Looks good. Looks like a main eventer. and he rocks. Like, to be honest with you. Yeah, Kawakami I also like, but I wish he would change his gear because he looks super indie.
Yeah. He needs to get rid of this singlet thing, whatever it is.
What happened to his old stuff? Like, I never looked.
Maybe
at
he
it
was
like,
owned
ah.
by Big Japan.
his gear was copyrighted by Big Japan. Yes. No. You can have him.
Go, you can go, but we're having this.
Yeah. Okay. I guess that's a logical explanation. In Striga speak. There, good stuff. There, I love it.
Yeah. And well, the third match on the show was actually like this embodiment of what great has shown us recently, because there are four guys that come from completely different backgrounds of pro wrestling. Because Yui Suka, as Vol Kid, of course, and recently having a great UWF Rules match with Takuya Nomura, and we talk about that in a bit here, he teamed with All Japan Pro Wrestling's Atsuki Aoyagi to take on Takanori Ito and a partner that was only revealed on the day of Jun Masaoka. So Takanori Ito, also of great, of course, and Jun Masaoka is an Osaka indie guy that wrestled on a lot of those Strong Hearts shows they did when they were based in Osaka. And that is basically what I said a couple of shows back when they announced these G Pro Wrestling shows, is that I was under the assumption that this is like the brand for the Strong Hearts to run their shows that they used to do in the Osaka region. And that is what's happening with him here. I thought the match was pretty good. Atsuki really showed a lot of fire here too, going to a different promotion. Jun Masaoka was able to display his powers too. The question that I still have here is, why is Takanori Ito in this match?
that was interesting. Triple Six representing with Jun Masaoka right now. I thought that, to me, I thought that they were the stars of the match, Ito and Izuka, the great wrestlers. And I know I like Aoyagi. I always speak highly of him as well. But Ito, to me, looked very good here. I guess you're probably thinking that he should be higher up the card and not in random mid-card tag matches, would be your point here. But if Izuka is going to be in it, I don't see why he can't be.
Sure. Maybe we had Matsui in the opening match, and he looked completely out of place. Yeah, that's not his forte right now.
No, he faced Shima and Irie. Those are two not... I mean, maybe Shima has some kind of martial arts experience we don't know about, or shoot background. He's been working with Tamura. Didn't you know Shima worked in Style E at one
point? Did he?
No. I totally made that up. he is not a shoot stylist at all, looking at his style. No. But so Matsui definitely did not fit in that match.
Yeah. So... Mostly a good show. We had another match with Ayano Irie losing to Michiko Miyagi, who bounced back after a crushing loss on the Version 1 show. Match was fine. Yeah, to your point, Dylan, still wondering what they are going for with this G Pro Wrestling stuff. I'm really looking forward to the next show where we mix the Pro Wrestling with the UWF style once again.
Yeah, we'll see what they can do then. Like I said, I have no problem with these shows as a fan. I just think in the grand scheme of things, it's better to have the mixed shows. Mm. But like this show was fine. And I will say like this wasn't nearly the show the other one was at the start of the month. But it was a smaller show. It wasn't expected to be that for like essentially a type of Road 2 type of show. This was not a bad show at all. And I actually enjoyed the last two matches pretty decently. The first three were okay. The third one was actually pretty good. The last two were definitely good. And you got a lot. You got the big win with Onitsuka. You got to highlight Tamura and Kawakami. Michiko got a win. But, I really couldn't have asked for more for this type of show.
Exactly. And you can easily watch this show in 90 minutes. If you like, skip all the entrances and skip all the stuff in between that happens. Like, for example, after the opening match, there's a lot of talking. You can skip all of this. And if you just watch all the matches, you can watch it easily in 90 minutes. That's really good. And then there was another match that they put up on their YouTube channel. But by the way, this is also this G Pro Wrestling version 1 from July 25 is also available on their YouTube. As is the UWF rules match between Takuya Nomura and Yui Suka that caught some fire on Twitter when it was uploaded. But I think if the match had been on the version 1 show earlier this month, the amount of people praising the match and the ratings for the match would be much, much, much more coming in than in comparison to this match that they only uploaded to their YouTube channel without any audience. I thought it was still an absolutely incredible match, and I loved all of it. The 15 minutes, I loved that they filled the entire 15 minutes. They had a clear story that they were going with in the end, Yuisuka being 1 point down. And that's what we pointed out too on the version one show. This point system is so, they can do so many things, so many stories with this point system. And so Yuisuka was 1 point down, and he had to ground Takuya Nomura once more, or have him reach the ropes once more to, in the end, not lose the match. And Takuya Nomura, in the end, he was on wobbly legs, but he was able to withstand, and thus, after 50 minutes, he won the match. Just an absolutely amazing match.
Obviously, this was right up my alley. I don't think I'll be surprising anyone with that. I thought that, man, Nomura, please leave Big Japan. Like, what a great... I completely agree with you, what you said about this match getting more praise if it was on the version 1 show. But what great timing. Right as he again gets undercut by Big Japan Pro Wrestling, for whatever reason that they want to book him how they do, he has this banger of a match versus Volk Kid, my hero in wrestling. Like, this guy's gonna end up my wrestler of the year or something by the end of the year.
I was really thinking, Dylan, he could have been in the conversation for most improved this year if he had just had more matches.
I know, that's the only thing he's missing, is just to have more meat on that resume. And he's building it up, but every time it's like it's all hits right now.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously I love this match. I will say to everybody that if you can't find it on YouTube or anything like that, go to cagematch.net on great. If you click on the shows, the links are right there too. So you can, you can find them right on the YouTube page. So it's very easy if you want to watch it. You definitely want to watch this one. If you're a fan of technical wrestling and hard hitting and any kind of shoot style, and the great storytelling, as you said, with the point system was so good. I will also praise my regular co-host on the Patreon, Rob. He has an article, How I Met Your Pro Res, episode 11. It said, I swore I would never plug this because he has Sekimoto as Ted on the How I Met Your Mother parody. And I cannot get behind that.
It's so amazing.
I cannot get behind that at all. But I will praise his writing. Sekimoto aside, I love Sekimoto. Ted is no Sekimoto, okay? If you've ever watched the show, he's no Sekimoto at all. I suggested to him that it should be Daisuke Sasaki is Ted. Because Asuka's Robin are there too, which would make perfect sense with their storyline. Mm. I'm a continuity fan in these shows. Maybe not that one, considering how it ended. But regardless, he wrote a great, great lengthy article on this match on Happy Wrestling Land, so check that out. It was really good. His writing, and I'm not just saying that because he's my friend, but he really laid out a lot of great background to this match where you can read it and you have a lot going into it, and I really recommend that. But I also recommend the match because this was awesome. One of my I don't even really want to say absolute favorites, because it's like every match that Yuisuka has is automatically one of my favorites. I feel like my level of excitement is growing to the point where I'm not even being unbiased anymore. But Nomura, I mean, what a great fit he was in this match. And a great little thing after what happened with Big Japan, he basically said that, hey, I want to take this title back to like when Hideki had it. And this was a Hideki-ism type of match here with Yuisuka. So I love that little tidbit there. Great matchup. And I could not even add anything more to what you said, other than what I already have.
Yeah, just as you said, go to Cage Match, go to the great page, and just check it out. There's another one coming this week with Takanori Ito facing Ryan Fujiwara. They had a couple of these experimental matches. They are all linked on the great page on Cage Match, so no reason to not check those out. On Our second to last show, we talked about the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix, and at the point of our recording, it was not clear who would be the final entrant in the tournament, and we couldn't even wait until the official announcement was made, because Saya Kamitani, Dylan, she gave it away.
Yeah, this was very amusing. They had the press conference for the tournament, and they were asking everybody, like, hey, who are you looking forward to facing? And then when it was her turn, she was like, oh, Mayu Iwatani, oh, Shuri, oh, blah, blah, blah. And then she said, Takumi Iroha as hers. And then she was like, what I say, guys? And they're like, you said Iroha. And then she was like, I'm sorry. It was very funny, to be honest with you. It was very amusing. But this should have been more of a well-kept secret. What kind of operation is Rossi running right now? He's letting secrets get out to the wrestlers, having them not, you know, have to protect his bullcrap. He needs to keep things under tighter ship. This could have been a protected secret to where nobody knew, but look where we are now. Everybody figured it out, and I'm sure nobody was upset when they heard it.
So Takumi Iroha once again back in Stardom. What can we expect in this upcoming 5-Star Grand Prix tournament from her?
Great matches, first of all. The way that the 5-Star Grand Prix is set up, every match has a 15-minute time limit, except for the finals. So you know that you're going to get a lot of really fast-paced wrestling, and that's something I like about this tournament that separates it. If you look at her block, let's go through her block, because she's in the Blue Stars block. She has Unagi Sayaka, Future of Stardom champion. That'll be interesting. They do push the Cosmic Angels pretty fairly. I think that'll be a win. Ruaka, this is her tournament debut. That'll obviously be a win for Iroha. Konami, very interesting matchup.
Yes.
With someone who's kind of similar to her stylistically. But I think Iroha has taken to it to another level, being the ace of the promotion. Heck, she helps run the promotion, marvelous. So she's at a little different level, but I think that'll be a very interesting match. Azumi will be a great match with her. That's
absolutely
something Azumi is like my dark horse candidate in this tournament to be an MVP level player. Iroha, her style, if you've seen her matches with Mayu Iwatani, then you know what to expect. She's going to be a little bit bigger than some of these other girls. She's going to use great power, great technique, and just bring a great edge to the tournament. She started in Stardom originally and then left to go to Marvelous.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of these people are all new people. She doesn't really have history with any of these.
Should also have a great match with Micah. Should be really good.
Yeah, Micah, great match. That's another person. Micah, JTO trainee, has definitely weaved in a lot of shoot stylist techniques and even made background into a lot of her matches. Very good performer. Tall Saya, she'll have to get revenge on her because she spoiled her debut, obviously. So that could be a hard, underrated.
Interesting how Iroha does against those top four names. I'd expect her to beat Saya Kamitani.
Yeah.
But then there's Tam Nakano, Shuri, and Utami Hayashishita. What do you expect here?
When I was previewing this tournament, and we didn't know who the X was, I thought they would avoid Iroha, because on paper you would want to, if you're going to bring in somebody like that, who's a big name, a big part of the promotion, you're going to have to push her hard. And I think that her coming in as the candidate, I thought it would be someone like Katakura might be a better fit, because you could have her lose more. Iroha, she's going to have to win against a lot of people.
Yeah, so, and Iroha's final two matches are on September 20 in Kuroken Hall against Utami Hayashishita, and then the final one on the final night of the Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix in Otawatt, September 25 against Shuri. So that's one of the top matches of the Blue Stars block, as well as Tam Nakano versus Utami Hayashishita.
Yeah, I thought that they were going to really save Shuri and Utami. I thought that would have been a great block decider match in my head, but now with Iroha coming in, that throws everything. I actually think Iroha's going to win her block, honestly, and I wouldn't be surprised. I think she may have maybe two losses. I could see her losing to Tom because Tom's a champion, but that could also be a very big match. If they have plans for Iroha after this would be an easy way to set up a future title match with Nakano. Other than that, I think she'll drop one other match. I could see it being Utami, obviously, as champion. Again, the champions could be the defining factor of not putting an outsider over them. But everything else, I think it's a pretty strong possibility she wins this block overall. Yeah. And I think she's going to have a lot of great matches.
Yes, definitely. That is an incredible addition. I actually did not expect them to go to a name that valuable and that high in her promotion. As you said, Katakura would have been much more logical, but this is definitely a banger of a name that that Saya Kamitani announced for this tournament.
If you think about it, it actually makes a lot of sense, though, because the point of this tournament, in my opinion, is Julia's going to win it. Mm-hmm. And if you have a Julia and Takamiya Roha final, Julia beating her means something.
Yes.
You know, especially like that kind of like puts everybody over strong, because Roha could have this hot run where she beats everybody in Blue Stars, and then Julia could beat her. So, you know, it's like it sets up everybody. You might be able to get a loss or two out of Roha, and that'll put somebody else over. So you're getting different people over with that bookie. So I actually like it a lot. And on paper, with Shuri and Utami in the same block, and you probably wouldn't want to revisit Nakano in the finals against Julia, bringing in somebody like Roha to win is very smart, I feel like. So I think a banger of a name, logical when you think about it on paper. I think maybe we worked ourselves into a shoot on that a little bit, because if you look at the booking, it makes a lot of sense. It makes more sense for Julia to beat Roha than Utami to set up another match, or Shuri again, you know, because they're partners already. So I think this kind of solves a lot of problems.
Yes, it does. It should be. And in the middle of the five-star Grand Prix, actually, there is a show that I came across. There is a card that is out. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about Stardom and Cinder Girls, Marvelous recently. I saw this Ice Ribbon card. It's their 15th anniversary card in the Yokohama Budokan on August 9. And I thought that the card is looking absolutely incredible. I quickly want to run this down with you, Dylan, here. First in the opener, Cherry, Mochi Miyagi, and Yuki Mashiro take on Itsuki Aoki, Nao Ishikawa, and Saran. Then we have Shon Shiryu returning to the promotion. Sadly, no Hideki Suzuki anywhere else here. Shon Shiryu teams with An Shamu, Yappi, and Madeline from Diana against Rina Shingaki from 2AW, Momokogo from Beginning, a.k.a. Actress Girls, Bunny Okaiwa, and Honori Hana from Seed Ring. And then we have the Hoshis, Hamuko and Ibuki Hoshi, taking on Aja, Kong, and Natsumi from, Fireworks Pro, 01 Pro Wrestling, whatever you want to call it. For the Triangle Ribbon Championship, Tekla defends against Ram Kaicho and Totoro Satsuki. Next, Ice X Infinity title challenger decision match. Akana Fujita versus Maika Osaki. Then a big, big singles match. Nanae Takahashi against Tsukushi Haruka. One for you, Dylan. Fantastic Ice title summer board and weapon bringing death match. Rina Yamashita versus Suzu Suzuki. International Ribbon Tag Team title, and here it gets really interesting because we have a double main event. Tsukasa Fujimoto and Hiroyo Matsumoto defend against Risa Sera and Maya Yukihi. And then, in the main event of the show, for the Ice X Infinity title, Tsukasa Fujimoto, being the double champion, defends against her tag team partner, Hiroyo Matsumoto. What a card.
Yeah, this card is great. I cannot wait for the Takahashi and Tsukushi match. Their company, they have had a pretty consistent year so far. It's a little tough to stand out when it comes to Joshi, I think, at this point in time. But you see a lot of their matches, especially Fujimoto as champion. I think she's had a really great reign, honestly. Like, pretty under the radar, unfortunately. But if you watch it, you know. She's had a lot of great matches. Her match with Tsukushi in April was a really great match, I thought. And the Yamashita and Suzu match is going to be an incredible match. Both of them have been dabbling in the deathmatch scene.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a big part of their story. I know a lot of people have really enjoyed Suzu's deathmatch intergender stuff. So,
and a lot of people have also enjoyed Rina Yamashita doing her stuff in Freedoms, too.
Yes, absolutely. So that's going to be a great match as well. And the two main matches with Fujimoto and Hiroyo, I mean, that's going to be awesome. Everybody knows that. So you've got really four matches that could be big standouts overall. And you've got, and you know, even the Micah and Akane match is going to be solid. It's going to be good. So everything else is going to be fun and easy to watch. Ice Ribbon always puts on good big cards. I always recommend, you know, you don't have to watch everything they put out, but if you can make time for some of their big shows when the, you know, the Ice Cross Infinity title is getting defended, you're going to have a good time. They almost always deliver on their big shows. So this is going to be probably one of the best shows that they put on all year, or any really company has put on all year, I feel like. I think this has that level of upside.
It has really huge potential. Just looking at this Nanae versus Tsukushi match, Hiroyo Matsumoto, Tsukasa Fujimoto, two of my favorites whenever I get to watch Yoshi. They are in two matches on this card. This is just, yeah, there is really something for everybody on this card.
I'm hype about Azuri Revolution getting back together too for this. Yeah. So Yuki had another tag team earlier on in the year with Ozaki as a part of Rebel Enemy. But to see Azuri Revolution back, legendary team in Ice Ribbon, that's going to be a bona fide hoot, in my opinion. I love this card.
It really should be a bona fide hoot, and that's basically it for that. And then there's one more Yoshi topic, Dylan, because right now we're in the middle of the 8th Tokyo Princess Cup, and we've seen four shows so far. The second round, as of this recording, is done. On this coming weekend, we will have the quarterfinals of the tournament, which are Miyu Yamashita against Misuki, then there's Maki Ito against Suzume, Miyu Watanabe against Yuki Aino, and Rika Tatsumi against Shoko Nakajima. That's the quarterfinals. From the tournament so far, what do you think were some of the outstanding matches?
Yeah, the tournament, I know a lot of people were kind of disappointed with the first show, think things got off to a rocky start. But here's the thing. With Tokyo Joshi Pro, you don't go in expecting the best wrestling, I feel like, of every promotion. It's like, they have some good wrestlers, but ideally you're looking at them for the total package of things, the aesthetics and the characters and the charisma of these performers. So, you know, you get a match like Raku and Moka Miyamoto, I wasn't thinking of a five-star classic. I knew it was going to be more kind of a comedic match, so I really wasn't disappointed at all with the first night. I thought it was pretty good. I thought Mahiro Kiryu looked really good in her match with Endo. You know, that was like the first match of the tournament, actually. I thought she looked really good. The main event of the first night, Miyu versus Naoko Kuda, I thought was solid. I wouldn't say it was great, but it was a solid match. And I thought Miyu always, she can't go below a certain level. You know, she's one of the best workers anywhere. And so that was a good match. The second night was better. I thought the main event of that match was really good. Rika Tatsumi and Hikari Noah. I thought that was probably the best match of the tournament that I've seen so far.
I have one other, but this is the second one I would recommend.
Yeah, the stand-up from the third show I thought was Mizuki versus Mirai Mayumi. Really good match there. Again, Mayumi's somebody I've been high on, even though she's a younger wrestler. And Mizuki is probably one of the better and most known wrestlers in Tokyo Joshi Pro, so I really enjoyed her match there. I thought that was probably, you know, up there for one of the best matches.
My favorite one, Dylan, favorite one from the tournament so far was Miyu Yamashita against Yuki Kamifuku. Going into the match, as you said, it depends highly on how you approach a match, and we've been praising Kamifuku a lot this year, but I think that this match really showed the entire growth that she has had all year long, because this match story, I thought, was so smart. And I don't want to compare the two wrestlers, specifically not for Yuki Kamifuku, but Miyu Yamashita maybe. This match reminded me a lot of the Yuji Kobayashi versus Hideki Suzuki match from a couple of years ago from Big Japan Pro Wrestling, because the approach that Yuki Kamifuku took in this match was she at no point whatsoever wanted to be in the kicking range of Miyu Yamashita. And that was the entire story of the match. And Yuki Kamifuku did it in different ways. three times in the match, she had the Manjigatame in, and she obviously is much taller than Mio Yamashita, so she can, in a pro wrestling mindset, she can apply much more pressure to Mio Yamashita being taller. And Mio Yamashita really had to fight to get Kamifuku off of her. And then also she used her really long legs to like drop kick Mio Yamashita away from her, so she couldn't get her kicks in either. But in the end, of course, Mio was better than Kamifuku and got her head kicks in nonetheless. But the approach of it, I really, really liked. So yeah, I might be the only one right now liking this match the most, but this really, really surprised me, and I loved it.
Hey guys, guess who? It's me, Kamiyu, coming through. That's her theme song.
It is.
She went from Old McDonald to that as well.
Yeah,
but
big improvement.
Yeah, yes, I completely agree with you on that. Yeah, I'm not as high on Kamifuku, but she's solid, definitely improved. And that was a good match. It wasn't like it was bad. The other matches stood out a little more, but that was not bad. Again, for what they wanted, I think pretty much everything. Again, maybe I'm grading on a curve, and maybe I'm unfair for that. But to me, there was like maybe one or two that I thought were lackluster. Everything else pretty much hit what they were going for, and or even exceeded expectations at times.
What did you think about the most gentle spinebuster in pro wrestling, that Mahiro Kiryu finished her match with Arisu Endo?
It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah. Okay. It was very, very gentle.
It does an idol. Okay, we have to be safe about this. Okay,
yes.
I thought Kira actually wrestled a good match until that point. to be honest with you, I liked her performance in there. She's somebody that I think she's not really pushed or hyped that much, but she's somebody that I enjoy her work. Pretty good every time I see her. Kind of like Tenma, although Tenma got knocked out early on with Kobashi. But yeah. I was happy Kobashi. She deserves it. Great young performer, and hopefully that there's more of that to come. More Kobashi in our lives.
Yes, I also really liked the Mirai Mayumi and Mizuki match. Of course, definitely one of the strongest tournament matches, if not the strongest. And just like you said, Mizuki now once again through to the quarterfinals. She won the last two tournaments, and she said she's going to win the third one in a row now. But now she's facing Mio Yamashita in the quarterfinals. So what are you expecting the semifinals and the finals to look like?
Well, I don't expect her to win three straight. I will say that. I think when you look at things, to me, when this tournament started, I had somebody in mind. But then, you know, let's look at the quarterfinals here, match by match. You have Yuki Aino versus Miyu Watanabe, which I correctly predicted. Maki Ito versus Suzume, I was half right on with Ito. Shoko Nakajima versus Rika Tatsumi, also correctly predicted. And Miyu Yamashita versus Mizuki. So I got 7 of 8 in my predictions for this. But when you look at the finalists, I thought that Ito makes the most sense.
Yes.
Finally set up their challenge. But here's where I kind of have a little bit of pause. Would they want to do that or save it for January 4th? Because that's historically their biggest show of the year. So that would kind of – if she wins the tournament, she's going to have that match before then. And you think you would want her big moment to be at January 4th. So I can see her going to the final but losing to somebody else. But who that would be, I'm not entirely sure. But because Ito stands out so much to me.
Yeah.
That
I was also thinking Ito. I mean, you can always do Shoko Nakajima. You can always go Mio Watanabe. But right now,
that would
Ito
be a
really
step
makes
up for
a lot of sense. Yeah.
Which, I mean, I would like. To be honest with you, like, if they did that, that would be cool. Setting up Miyu versus Miyu, I'm into it.
Maki Ito really makes sense.
Yeah, it just depends on if they want to do it now or later. But one way or another, she's going to get a title shot against Miyu. So, like I said, she stands out the most. But like you said, Shoko, you can plug and play. Miyu would accomplish something. She doesn't have to win the title just because she won the tournament, obviously. Tatsumi was the former champion. I think that they've kind of put her back in the tag role, so I don't think it will be her, to be honest.
But yeah, she also has a win over Hikari Noah, who is the International Princess Champion.
Yeah. That would not correct. That's even more reason to be suspect. I know, again, more of a tag wrestler traditionally, but they have always pushed her more than Tenma. So if they wanted to pull the trigger, it's possible. But I think she would be down the list. I think the favorites would be Ito, Shoko, and Watanabe.
Yes. I agree. So, yeah, the semifinals. Then, so the quarterfinals, the matches that you just mentioned are on July 31st in Shinjuku Face, and the finals, the semifinals are on August 14 in Kurokanol, and the final is happening on August 15 in Kurokanol. So a doubleheader in Kurokanol for Tokyo Joshi Pro.
Absolutely. Remember, too, that after this, they're going to mix up, you know, they're going to do the lottery, quote unquote, to determine the semifinals, too. So it's not like it's set in stone. Somebody will face, you know, X will face Y in the next round. It's going to be a lottery.
I always love these lotteries that DDT do. They always do that for the King of DDT tournament as well, where they just do the lottery and they'll find out in the middle of the ring. It's a shoot.
It's all real.
Yes.
I trust all of these women to deal with a shoot situation if things came down to it.
Yeah, that is everything I have on my list, except for one final topic, of course, here on this show, Dylan. It is New Japan Pro Wrestling. They ran their Wrestle Grand Slam in Tokyo Dome show this past Sunday, drawing around 6,000 fans. Of course, you can not compare this to a regular Tokyo Dome show with the COVID situation and weather, actually not around 6,000, 5,389 fans they drew. You cannot compare this with a regular Tokyo Dome show. There was this LA Times article where they called the show the hottest ticket in Japan right now because of the Olympics not allowing fans in attendance. Yeah, it is. It is true. And it's also true because out of ticket sales 2 weeks before then. So it is even, the ticket is so hot that you couldn't even get a ticket anymore. That's how hot it is.
You had to steal it. It has to literally be hot to get a ticket.
It's illegal to get a ticket. Yes.
Hey, shout out to Victoria Kim and Hanako Lowry, the writers of that LA Times article. They said it's the hottest ticket. Obviously, they look at it more from the Olympic perspective. You know, that was really the deal with that. But I love how one of the fans on there said, I trust the promoters of wrestling more than the Olympics to keep us safer and all this stuff. And I was that may be the only that wrestling promoters get put in a positive light like that. So that was very fun there. Yeah. But yeah, that was actually pretty interesting to read that whole article, to be honest. But yes, the hottest ticket in Tokyo, just over 5,000 fans. And like you said, how can you analyze this for so many reasons? I feel like you can't take anything positive or negative from this number. I know a lot of people, obviously on paper, like if you just look at it, it's a horrible number for a Tokyo Dome. But if you add context to it, like, was it really that bad? All things considered, what more could they have done at the end of the day? You know, so they did their best in a crazy time with a crazy show to have it at this time. But you know, from that perspective, it's almost like there's nothing I can say about it because there's nothing you can analyze, positive or negative, because there's just too much around it.
There really is. There's a couple of things that I want to talk about in regards to this show. Of course, I thought about these show structures. So this show was very, very long. It was 6 hours long. I did not watch the King of Pro Wrestling thing. So I cut off like 40, 45 minutes of the show. Being very smart, Dylan, by the way.
You missed so much with that match. It was unbelievable. One of the greatest matches I've ever seen.
Can't wait for your rundown. I watched all of the other matches and I quite enjoyed the matches. I'm not really sure which my favorite. All the matches on the show had their pros. I would just say, just for the sake of it, for all the circumstances that led to the match, the Shingo Takagi versus Hiroshi Tanahashi match is my favorite one. Even though I also very much enjoyed Robbie Eagles versus El Desperado. Robbie Eagles just returned and immediately won the Junior Championship. I really liked his selling, his leg selling, and I thought that Desperado was a great champion. Also played a great role in this match. But also Okada versus Jeff Cobb had its moments, but I wouldn't necessarily call it one of my favorites. And then there was this tag title match. Well, of course, the Junior tag title was on the show too. Taiji Ishimori and El Fantasmo defended against the super coaches of Ryusuke Taguchi and Rocky Romero, 21 minutes, but I didn't think the match was really good. Then there was the heavyweight tag team title. Taiji and Zack Sabre Jr. regained the championship from Tetsuya Naito and Sanada, who had just recently, a couple of weeks ago, won the championship. And the match went 38 minutes, and we again have new champions now. What do you think about that?
Oh, like their first match they did a couple weeks ago was basically, in my review of that, I said, there's good stuff here, but you have to get through a lot of bad to get to it. And this match was basically very similar to their first match at the end of the day. So this was a match that I did not enjoy very much. To be honest with you, especially the first part of the match. I mean, I know that's kind of a thing in New Japan, that lame first halves of matches. It's been that way for a million years at this point. But in this match specifically, like, that stuff that Naito and Zack were doing was so boring.
rolling around on the ground. Yes.
No, but it was so aimless and lame. Like, I'm down for technical wrestling if we want to do that. We just saw in great multiple examples of that. But this, it was like, it was totally like, hey, we're wasting time because this has to be a 40-minute match. Yeah. Then all of a sudden, I will give this man credit. When Taichi came in around the halfway mark of this match, he tried to add some energy because I think we could all tell that this match sucked at that point. Like, if anything else, maybe not an execution. It's not like they did anything wrong per se. It's just, it was so boring. And it was like, this match was dying a death. And Taichi came in there and added some energy to this match, I thought. And he did a really good job for what it was. An unlikely source bringing the heat to this match. And I think it got better as time went along. By the end,
Right. The first 15 to 20 minutes, you can just jump in there and watch the rest of the match.
Like I said, I know we make this criticism of other matches, and it's true. But at this one especially, it added nothing. Like that, it added nothing to this match. It was such a terrible start. I was hating this match by the ending. I was like, when is this going to end? Like, this would have been like similar to that match they had with the Gorillas in February that went a million years and ended with a DQ, my worst match of the year. This was where this match was heading to me. But they ended up getting things better and getting it back on track and having an all right match. To me, I still think it was way worse than some of the other matches on the show. But still, it was all right by the end. But for 40 minutes, I could not recommend that.
Yeah, so Sanada and Naito just won the title on July 11 from Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. Now the titles are back with Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. They're still feuding, but now they also added Yoshihashi and Hiroki Goto, and they're doing a three-way match. Also, of course, New Japan is already back on tour. The Summer Struggle Tour is going on, and that's another topic that we're going to get into in a bit here. But I thought about all these long matches and all these repetitive feuds or repetitive matches even that are happening in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And there is a couple of ways you can look at it. And one approach to this is, of course, because of COVID-19, they want to add fewer guys to their lineups. Which would be the explanation for this show having five matches. Then again, there is the 22-man New Japan Rumble. So this explanation makes no sense if you have 22 men wrestle in a Rumble match. So the other explanation that I have is, this is their new formula, and it will continue to exist even after Corona.
What's their new formula?
Well, their new formula is to have long matches, few matches on the cards, and just put on 5 match cards and have multiple of them, because that's what they were doing even before the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah.
They had these 3 shows in Osaka, 2 of them in Osaka and 1 in Aichi, which had the Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Kenta main event, which would have been a great, great addition to this Tokyo Dome card. But of course, due to unfortunate situation with Kota Ibushi, they were glad that Tanahashi was free on this evening. But the matches that they put on to these shows before, of course, they did the prelude to the tag title match with Taichi against Naito, Zanada against Xavier, and then on the other night, Naito against Xavier and Zanada against Taichi. But they also did Evil against Tomohiro Ishii. And those would be matches that you would think would be better suited on a Tokyo Dome card to boost the card even more. But I guess they are doing a lot of shows that they deem bigger shows to do, to just do more shows. And I guess that is what we'll have to expect from New Japan in the future too.
Yeah, it's been that way for a while now. Like that, mm-hmm. these 5-6 match shows. I mean, it's been that way for a while now. So it didn't surprise me at all.
No, I'm not saying it's anything surprising. A lot of people come up with that saying it's due to the COVID situation, and they're in kind of a holding pattern and stuff like that. But when you look at what they do, they are repeating a lot of stuff, and you could come to the assumption that they are in a holding pattern, but at the same time, it seems like that they are fine with this right now because they are getting a lot of shows out of this. And yes, holding pattern can be a subject, but in my opinion, and in, well, also WH's opinion, he said it on Post Parezo 2, New Japan is doing a lot of shows, and even in July now and in August, they are having so many shows. This Summer Struggle show that started this week does have 16 shows, and 13 of those are in Tokyo Kuroken Hall. So the reason of New Japan to do these shows is clearly to generate revenue, because maybe they need cash flow. Because remember last year, they had these 3 months off where they paid the entire roster, and they really can't pack their places with a lot of people. So they're thinking, in my opinion, is we need to run more shows to generate more revenue. But on the contrary of that, they are running the Tokyo, they are running Kuroken Hall to death. And that, of course, they need the money now, they need the revenue now, and they want to get the revenue now. It's very short-sighted though, because running Kuroken Hall so often, I mean, for the show that happened on July 27, now they got a decent number. This is the first one coming off of the Tokyo Dome show, which was pretty well received. They did 455 people. That is okay. But at some shows, they have crowds in the high 200s. And well, then there is this shows in the MetLife Stadium coming up where they have, where they probably, no, they have announced they will be doing Shingo Takagi and Evil. In short, I don't expect this to change, because I expect them to want to just generate more revenue in putting up shows with a few matches and just long matches. So this is not going to change once COVID-19 ever ends in Japan.
Yeah, I mean, we had this conversation months ago with them burning out Kuroken Hall, and I basically said then that they want to have more people at their shows, and they're going to go do what they have to do to get it, even if it doesn't make a lot of sense. Or burns down the town, so to speak, with Kuroken Hall. Again, this has been going on for a while now, and with COVID, it's super uninteresting to me to even talk about, because who knows what's going to happen at the end of the day. Like, there's just no telling when that will be. I definitely think it's not going to be this week, I would say, for sure. So it's going to be something that's at least for a few more months now, and probably longer, in all honesty. So to me, when it ends, who knows where they're going to be at? But it's clear that this is a business decision, this Kuroken Hall nonsense. Yes. For somebody watching, you know, it's just silly when you think about it. But to run these shows over and over, the fans on that show, WH made a point that even if they wanted to go, they're not going to be able to afford all these shows at the end of the day. So
the tickets for these Kuroken Hall shows, the lower price section is 5,500 yen, and the higher price section is 8,500 yen. which is between 50 and 80 bucks in US dollars for one Kurikanola show, and there are 13 of them.
Yeah, I mean, what do you expect from the fans? I mean, even a long time ago,
I mean, they of course have to be expecting these kind of crowds now, and it's like they are running Kurikanola shows on a lot of weekdays too, because so the rent for the building will be cheaper, and you gotta guess that they do have a pretty decent discount deal on Kurikanola at this point, running them so often, so the revenue is coming in. The question that remains is, will fans remain to be coming to these shows if they will just continue to put on the same shows?
Oh, it's only going to get worse. I mean, like I said, this has been going on for a while now, and it's only gotten worse. You know, first we were like, oh my God, 400, 500 fans, it's like, this sucks. And then it was like, oh, they're getting beat by, 2AW, this sucks. Then it's like, oh, they're into, like, oh, 300 fans, 400 fans. That's a good show for them now. So it's like, you know, it's only going to get worse the longer this goes along at the end of the day, and the longer that the virus goes along. But like you said, at the end of the day, this is a business decision. So they know something that leads them to believe this. On paper, I don't really understand it, because I think they could do better if they didn't run Kurikanola every day. But at the end of the day, these shows are, you know, they're for the purest fans to watch at home, to come to. Like we said, they don't have enough money to afford all of them, so you're going to get this, and it's only going to get worse. So, yes, I don't really understand, but clearly it's a business decision.
But except for this, there actually was a silver lining for New Japan Pro Wrestling amidst all the stuff that recently happened with Kota Ibushi being out. And, man, this guy, what a year he has. Kota Ibushi. Yeah. He would have been in the main event of this show. It just seems like, I don't know, there's just bad luck after bad luck after bad luck happening to this guy.
It's not good at all. Like, sure.
It really sucks. But this show was, as I said, was well received. We have a rating of 8.40 in Cage Match as of this recording. Main event is rated at 9.49 based on 119 votes right now. Clearly ahead of the second most well-received match with the tag team title in the co-main event, actually, 8.41. Dylan, what did you think about the show overall, and what was your favorite match?
I thought it was a really strong show, honestly. One of the best New Japan shows. And the main event, I thought, was absolutely phenomenal and one of the best matches of the year, I would say. I actually think they trumped their first match in January, which I really liked. Maybe there's recency bias there, but man, when Tanahashi hit that Kamigoye, hit the high fly flow, I was like, listen, I don't care if there's 5,000 fans, I don't care if there's a pandemic, I don't care about the Olympics, I don't care about Kota Ibushi, I don't care about anything. That match felt like the Tokyo Dome main event when that happened, and it's amazing. Like, Tanahashi is a genius. Like, wrestling, like, there's no doubt about it. He's one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. I thought, unbelievable performance. I honestly think that this is better than what we would have got with Ibushi. I think they actually lucked into something with this.
I agree. Yeah.
Like, clearly I'm not alone. Like, look at the ratings we have here. Like, unbelievable match. And Shingo, what a year he's having again. He continues to be a highlight of the company, doing great things, but I was just so blown away with Tanahashi that, like, I just know sooner rather than later, everyone's going to tell me that he's broken down and his time is up, and it's all over, and then he's going to be put in a big match, and he's going to have the match of the year. Like, and it's going to be amazing, and everyone's going to love him, and we're all going to throw roses at his feet. I think he's undoubtedly, even at this stage, like, he's not pushed this way. And there's no question, you know, he's not having the quantity of matches that he's had before. But if you put a gun to my head on this roster, and you put a guy and you say, you need to have a great match, he's right up there. Like, these are probably the two guys I would turn to have that match. And that's basically what happened. There was a gun to New Japan's head saying, look, Ibushi, he had trouble with his shot. He had trouble with pneumonia. He's out. He's had a horrible year. We need somebody. And all the other matches are booked. Who do we turn to? Well, let's turn to the guy we stupidly had and embarrassingly had in the New Japan Rumble, which is ridiculous that you have a Tokyo Dome show and Tanahashi's not in any kind of major plans. But thankfully, through their own stupidity, They've lucked into something great with Tanahashi. Like this, like I said, they made things despite everything that was terrible going into the show. By the way, not even just the fans. They really didn't even put any effort into the set. It was a really low-key setup. Like, this was not the Tokyo Dome, the Wrestle Kingdom setup.
Yeah, they didn't even take down the baseball nets. Yeah. So fans sitting in on the bleachers, far away from the ring, they basically had to watch the show through the baseball nets.
It was like a never-ending steel cage match on the show, almost. But like I said,
down in Tokyo.
Yes, bringing back the legends of TNA here. The TNA relationship is back. But despite everything, despite how terrible the circumstances were and all the messed up stuff about it, like they were able to convince me that this was a Tokyo Dome level main event. That says so much about both of them. But I thought Tanahashi in particular was just phenomenal. I thought this was a great, great match.
And, you know, there's a lot of talk going on with the clap crowds, you know. But whenever there is a big moment that the fans love and are excited for and are surprised by, you will get a big reaction still, though, in these COVID times. In the Kenta versus Hiroshi Tanahashi match the day before, Katsuyori Shibata hitting the ring and kicking Kenta in the face got a huge reaction from the crowd. And then, you named it, Tanahashi's Kamigoye in this match got a huge reaction, just like Shingo Takagi kicking out of the high fly floor got a huge reaction from the crowd. So, you can't really put it to clap crowds or whatever. When a show is exciting, when a match is exciting, it's just exciting.
Absolutely. And I got to tell you, like, I knew in my heart that, you know, Shingo was going to win. And I say this about guys like Ishii and Goto in the past. But you knew in your heart that Shingo was going to win this. Like, there was really no chance that Tanahashi would win. But by God, when he hit that Kamigoye, that high fly flow, I was ready for a title change. Like, I was like, like, you know what? Like, I know this makes no logical sense, but who knows? It's New Japan. Like, it's crazy. Screw it. like, this was an incredible match. Like, let him have a million more great matches. So I was ready for it. They made you believe. The fans believed. It was awesome. And Shingo looks like a superstar coming out of it, beating Tanahashi like that. Like, I thought this match was so great. And it's amazing that they backed into this. Again, Shingo, he's got the Midas touch. Like, even when everything sucks around him, he's able to somehow stumble into to just greatness. Definitely.
We'll see about that.
Until now. but yeah, so like I said, if the wrestling is the Olympic event, I'm giving Tanahashi the gold.
Yes.
Right now. Like Shingo can have the title, but I'm giving him the gold medal for this performance in there. But I have to say another thing.
I may have undersold the match because I really was glued to my TV as well, watching this go down, and Shingo and Tanahashi doing their stuff in this match. And I, just like you, thought it was absolutely worthy Tokyo Dome main event. Except for that, yes, the matches were good, but most of them, in my opinion, just did not feel like high profile Tokyo Dome matches. But Tanahashi and Takagi clearly did.
I'll say this. I thought that junior heavyweight title match was absolutely incredible. Like, I thought that was a great, great match. And, like, this Desperado title reign has sucked, in my opinion. I don't think he's been a good champion. Not necessarily his fault. It's just this title reign hasn't worked out. He's had a lot of bad luck, too. Remember, in May, you know, they had the thing with Yo. They had to move the match back. Yo was a terrible challenger. I don't know why they put him in the title match. That match was really underwhelming. The match with Ishimori, I thought that had a lot of run-ins and bullcrap, and, you know, it wasn't that great.
Yeah, I didn't even bother with that one.
Yeah, I mean, you already know what happened. Like, Kanemaru run out for a babyface pop. Like, that's all you need to know to know how flat that match was. But, yeah, his title reign has been a real struggle, and I'm so happy that they put it on Eagles. I think Eagles just is a phenomenal wrestler. I love his selling is so good. His matches are so good. His offense is so good because, and it's something I say again about some other guys, like Goto is a guy that I think is very strongly, and I've always thought this. Eagle's entire offense sets up his finishing move.
Yes.
It completely leads to that. Yes, some of the comments I read about it were saying, oh, it wasn't a high-flying match. I don't care. Like, I don't need every match to be a high-flying match. This was a great match that... And listen, Desperado, what great selling he had, too. On the leg, he really tried to amp
finish,
up...
The finish was so strong. When he put over Robbie Eagles, the Ron Miller special, he put it over so well. He was fighting and clawing and just couldn't get to the ropes and had to... He didn't want to, but he had to.
Absolutely. I just thought that was a great, great match. I think, like I said, that main event was so awesome. And like I said, I was kind of surprised you were a little down on this because those two matches to me...
No, I wasn't down. Those are the two that I pointed
on
out.
The show.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, it's clear, no. Like you basically tried to move on from the show as fast as possible. Earlier,
No. That's not what I tried, but I just... I had some other thoughts in my mind. No, I had this sheet where I rate shows, and I gave this show a 7 out of 10.
That's fair. That main event, by the end of it, I was like standing up. By the end of that main event, I was like, this it wasn't incredible. And like the thing is, this was a match on one day's notice that happened. We just saw Tanahashi have a main event versus Kenta, which had the great Shibata moment, which was just super cool. But I mean, you know, you're thinking this match is like, oh, what are they going to do? How are they going to do this? Is this show going to be so boring? Because on paper, I was dreading watching this show. Because I knew every match was going to be 25.
My issue with this one is that it just did not... In this circumstance, as you said, you can't really blame them, but it just did not feel to me like a Tokyo Dome show.
Oh, I agree with that completely.
And at no point did they really have any efforts to make you feel like it's a Tokyo Dome show. They didn't. For example, in the main event, Shingo Takagi came out and he had this... like minor fireworks standing next to him.
Yeah.
But there was a stage.
I wonder what they were thinking about this show. Because I kind of speculated. When we ended our recording last time with WH, he hung up early. We kind of talked a little bit afterwards. And I was thinking, I was like, man, is Gato and these guys just thinking, this freaking show, I hate it. Like, why do we have to do this? Like, you know, because it feels like they didn't really put any effort. And you're totally right on that, to be honest with you. It felt like a very normal type of show just in this huge Tokyo Dome that you could have 5,000 fans in. So from an aesthetic standpoint, this was not a good show at all. But I thought, like, the two singles titles matches, I thought were so damn good. Like, I said, I love the main event, and I love this junior title match. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. You know, Okada and Cobb, I got to say, I mean, we kind of speculated this on the last show. I think we both thought that this was setting up Cobb to win.
Well, still get this.
Stupid. People, we were to think Okada would lose in the dome on there, but you know, like you said, this is setting up a G1 match when you think about it.
It is actually setting up another match because on this Kurikunal show that just happened, Jeff Cobb attacked Okada, so we're probably getting another immediate rematch, and that would be before I knew about that, I was thinking it would have been so smart to have Okada lose to Cobb just before the G1 climax to put even more steam behind Okada eventually winning the climax.
Maybe we'll get your wish.
Yes.
I do,
Different ways now in New Japan.
Yeah, like I said, I thought the match was solid. You know, I didn't think it was a bad match by any means.
7.66. That's fine.
Yeah, good match. Like I would say, you know, probably, like, I thought Cobb always has really impresses me when I watch these shows. He's done a good job, but definitely not on the level. Like I said, the tag match I was really hot and cold on. It wasn't bad, but I wouldn't recommend it at that length. Maybe the inmates liked it a little bit more than me on the whole. Probably quite a bit more than me, actually. 8.6 or something like that on there.
The tag title match, 8.41.
Yeah, that's a pretty strong rating. I'm surprised that got higher than the junior title match. Maybe too. I was just maybe I'm just like one-sided, but I mean, I was super happy to see Eagles back. This sets up a great match with Hiromu. They set that up that he's been cleared. He challenged the winner of that match on the next show. I think him and Eagles would be a great showing. Very disappointed that Hiromu is coming back in this division. This is the lame division that they're in. But listen, him and Eagles will be a great match. And like I said, the main event was just a work of art. I felt like just a truly, truly phenomenal match. Yeah. And then, of course, it ended And I can't blame you if you did. I'm not saying you did, but if you did want to move on, I could not blame you considering what happened at the end. And who comes out, of course? The man of the hour. We just had this classic main event. Like we said, it kind of took everything bad about the show aesthetic-wise and effort-wise from the company and just like, screw it, these guys are so good, we love it anyway.
And
so
you know,
who comes out?
You know, there's one of my favorite tropes in all of pro wrestling. There's a video playing, and the guy standing in the ring immediately freezes. Can't turn around anymore. He just stands there, staring at the screen, while evil pops up behind him.
This was evil. Whoever booked this has
you know
a darkness
who booked this.
Man, that's true. We do know who booked this. I guess you're right. He definitely has some darkness, some demons in his heart, I would say. We just saw this classic match with Tanahashi, and their follow-up was evil here. Like I said, I mean, the attack I thought was just a real downer, to be honest. And he got in trouble for saying something he shouldn't have on the post-match.
Yeah. There was something that popped up on Twitter. And it is, I don't know how that happened, because it's not something that I've ever seen anyone mention about New Japan before. So the word that Evil used in this post-match press conference, I think he meant to say it in direction to Milano Collection 80, didn't he?
That's what I thought. That's what I
Shingo, or did he mean to say that to Shingo?
I didn't even see this because they pulled the video down.
Yeah.
They didn't want anyone to see this. So I was really following along on Japanese Twitter on this, and that's what it made it seem like. But in the press conference, it seemed like it was more towards Shingo. But regardless, you know, he used this, and honestly, I had never even heard of this word before. But it's like a really bad slur for like transgender people and stuff like that. You know, and they use it towards the gay too. Like, you know, you kind of get where I'm going with this, like the Japanese version of this. So it was real bad, to be honest, to say that. And I saw a lot of people, I thought it was interesting, on Japanese Twitter. They brought up Zima, the sponsor of New Japan. And that's a whole other can of worms. It's one thing to say something offensive or whatever, and it's clear they were trying to hide it and all of that. But if a sponsor were to get riled up about it, that kind of changes. That's going to land somebody in some hot water. But it seems like their hiding has been pretty effective so far.
Yeah, it has been effective. And, you know, it's just so... I don't know why you even would go to that and just use words like that. Because it is just the cheapest way of getting heat when just using slurs like that. Even if they had left the video on, it's what heat do you expect to generate from that kind of behavior?
I don't... Like, the thing is, when I was, again, looking at Japanese Twitter, the reaction, like, if this had happened in an American company, that guy would have been, he wouldn't have made it, like, to the next night. Well, yeah. Like, it would have been over. Like, all over, he would have had to have gone to be good. You know, he had to go.
It wasn't a lot of tweets, actually. When you searched for it, when you searched for the word, and you searched for evil or the hashtag, it was... Yeah. On the day where I searched it on, it was on Monday. It was... Maybe a couple of dozen tweets, but that was it.
Yeah, it wasn't like selective outrage. And even some of those, you know, some were mad, some were like, whoa, look at the one, like, this is wild. Like, look what he said. That was kind of like some of the tone of some of the Japanese tweets. Some of them were outraged, obviously. But like I said, if this happened in America, it would be all over. Like, everything would blow up. It would just be a huge meltdown on Twitter.
Yeah,
and...
imagine something like this happening in AEW or WWE.
Yeah.
Man,
he wouldn't have made it the next day. Like they would have had to have handled it immediately. Just like look at in AEW when they had that Spanish commentator.
Right.
And he said something like that. Yeah, exactly. They fired him right away. Like
he mocked Hikaru Shida.
Yeah. He made some stereotypical Asian. Right. Nonsense on there, like, and that probably wasn't as deep of a slur as what Evil said on there, but it's like they did it right away. Like they fired him, it wasn't even a thought, you know. And that's what would happen if somebody did that there. But in Japan, I don't want to really speak on the culture and how controversial something like that is, But obviously it was distasteful, I mm-hmm. would say.
Yeah, obviously it was, because otherwise they wouldn't have taken down the video.
Yeah, you could tell that they had to have some fear of that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, to take down the video, it's clear that they were kind of worried about that getting out. They didn't want that. You know, this wasn't something I don't think that they just intended, because they took it out right away, you know, on that end. So they clearly did not want any problems with this. And like I said, at the end of the day, it feels like it's been pretty effective. I don't think there's going to be any punishment for evil coming out of this.
Well, no, clearly not, because they announced the card for Wrestle Grand Slam in the MetLife Dome, the former Sabre Dome, on September 5. And there is Robert Eagles defending the junior title against Hiromu Takahashi. Then the three-way match for the IWGP Tag Team title, Taichi and Zack Sabre Jr. defend against Sanada and Tetsuya Naito. And against the, well, two-thirds of the never open weight six-man tag team champions, Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi. And, of course, Shingo Takagi defends the IWGP World Heavyweight title against Evil. What do you expect from this match?
Oh, I expect it to be terrible.
Can Shingo Takagi overcome Evil?
No, because even if they were to have a good match on their own, they will have to deal with all kinds of bullcrap from Dick Togo and a bunch of nonsense that they can't even really get effective heat for anyway in the current climate. If it would, even in the best of times, which I'm not convinced of. And, you know, it's Evil at the end of the day. It's somebody that I don't think anybody's really that invested or excited in when it comes to this.
It's going to be 20 minutes of heat interferences.
Yeah.
And Shingo Takagi, in the end, overcoming all of that.
I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. I couldn't agree more with you on that one. It should be something that I do not enjoy, to be honest with you. You have to wonder, why Evil? Like that, you know, he has not been a guy. He's been de-pushed pretty strongly this year from where he was last year. You know, if you look at his run, it's like he lost at the Dome to Sonata in a match that really didn't get over. Remember, they were laughing at that match. he was in that goofy Yano match, which everybody hated, the blindfold match, and really hasn't done anything of note since then. Has lost a couple of six-man challenges. You said he beat Ishii on the lead-up to this?
Yep.
I didn't even notice that. So, hey, you've got your finger on the pulse more than me, clearly.
Was it actually on the same show as the Kenta and Tanahashi match?
It might have been.
It was. It has a rating of 3.93.
Well, I can already imagine how that match went.
Yeah, I saw the finish of that. It was exactly how you imagine.
I mean, if Ishii's having a 3.9 match with you, then Shingo's not going to be able to get anything great. I mean, I love Shingo. We all love Shingo. Everybody loves Shingo.
Thing is,
we have to also be realistic.
Thing is, Dylan, they just did Tanahashi, and Kota Ibushi is not on these cards.
Right.
Naito is in a tag team program.
And it can't be Okada.
It can't be Okada, because he's winning the G1. So, it's Evil.
Does it have to be Evil? Couldn't it have been Ishii?
No, it doesn't have to be Evil, but that is obviously the guy they think of. When they think of, well, we can't do Tanahashi, we can't do Okada, we can't do Ibushi, so yeah, there's Evil, okay.
Okay, I guess you're right on that one. I guess when you really break it down in Gato world that we're in, that makes some sense. So I will give them that. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that goes in terms of fans, what's going to happen with it. Again, there's so many questions up in the air just about the pandemic, the show, like what's going to happen? What if somebody else gets injured in one of these 10 million shows they're running to lead to it? You know, you just never can tell at the end of the day what's going to happen. What happens if Evil gets taken out? Are they going to put Tanahashi in there again? In the Dome? There?
They may have to. I'm just browsing through these cards, and there is no Kojima, there's no Nagata on these cards. Suzuki is there. Oh, there's Tenzan.
There you go. Tenzan, you can always count on old reliable.
Yes, you can always go to Tenzan. Oh, actually, Nagata and Kojima are on these cards, I'm sorry.
Okay, there you go. They've shown a real hesitancy to push them at all, so... Yeah. I guess like you said,
Makabe is also on one of the few of those cards. He's a guy. He's a name.
Who?
But Togi Makabe, but he has been he's not been in conversations of title matches in years and years.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is basically it.
Well, great. Like I said, a Dome show main evented by Evil, just what we all wanted. Do you think that, because we already got announced that Chase Owens will be in the G1, which I know we're all so excited about.
You know, when you break that down, there have been times where I praised Chase Owens for his wrestling. And to be quite honest, when he first came to New Japan, I didn't really think that he was any good at all. He kind of worked himself into the promotion, and he did some work to earn a spot in New Japan Pro Wrestling. There have been a lot of allegations against the guy, and he obviously is, I don't know how to say this properly, but there have been those allegations, you know. But New Japan obviously doesn't care about these, and he's one of those guys that have been there for the promotion for a long time now, and they obviously want to reward him for that. But he is somewhat of a moderately decent worker, but he is in no ways a worker that I would consider for a G1 Climax tournament. And when I think about the lineup, there could be Yujiro Takahashi, and that is the match that everybody immediately went to. Imagine Yujiro Takahashi versus Chase Owens in the G1 Climax.
Imagine. Like, that's what I was thinking when I got announced, is, man, this G1, it could be a rough ride. Like, this go-around.
Oh, yeah. If they continue this trend of having these cards with these long matches, and we have Chase Owens in a 25-minute match, I don't know, man.
I don't know. It depends on how they book it, because they did have the 5-match G1s last year.
Yeah.
And it wasn't significantly different, but like you said, they've really gotten the habit of this lately.
Yeah, those G1 shows last year actually were a breeze to watch, because the most of them were like 2 hours long.
Yeah. They contained it to the 5 matches, and they all were pretty normal. You know, like obviously the main event would go long most of the time, but overall it wasn't like it was 5 25-minute matches or something like that.
No, but this year they've gone absolutely crazy.
I'm really gonna wonder. Do you think that they're gonna have Jay back? He's in Impact right now.
Yeah.
And champion. He has a chance to come back. They're obviously doing this show in August. Mm-hmm. For New Japan Strong.
Well, since like Nagata was in the US too, Kojima was there too, and they are back already. Why not? Of course, Jay White and David Finlay as well. Juice Robinson is there too. They would be cool additions to the tournament as well.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm not historically his biggest fan, but I thought Jay, he cut a really good promo on Impact. I think he's mm-hmm. a really good fit for American TV wrestling, and somebody that's going to continue to build his heat and performance up through that. Strong's got an interesting lineup. Seems like it's getting a little bit of buzz for their big show. So that's good for him.
Yeah, they really sold a lot of tickets for this show already.
Yeah.
Close to 2,000, and that is already close to what they can sell for this show in these times. And there's 3 matches announced on this card. Fred Rosser, Rocky Romero, and Wheeler Yuta. Shout out to Wheeler, also for making his AEW debut. I was really, really happy for him.
Brother Utes.
Yes. Against Clark Connors, TJP, and Renarita. That should be a cool match.
Yeah.
Alex Covlin, Challenge Match Series. Coughlin takes on Carl Fredericks. And then there's the Strong Openweight title match where Tom Lawler defends against Jay White, who, by the way, does he still have the Never Openweight title? I think he has.
Who?
Or is Tanahashi the champion?
Jay is the champion, right?
Jay's the champion, right? Yeah.
He had it when he ran out to Impact. He brought the title.
Right. Yeah, so he is still the Never Openweight champion. He hasn't defended it in a long time.
He's been in America for a long time, it seems like.
Yeah, and he was out quarantining in the dojo, too.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if he is... How long is this going to go on for? But like you said, he'll probably be back for G1. You would think he would have to be. Let me ask you something, because you mentioned allegations and crap about Chase Owens, and obviously we don't think much of him as a worker at this point. Do you think there's a chance Ospreay will be back for G1?
Yes.
That's kind of where it's trending to me. I feel like he was making those comments on Twitter about the title match at the Dome. It feels like that he's going to be back sooner rather than later. I wouldn't be surprised if he made an appearance on that Dome show, actually. You know, that could set up something where maybe him and Shingo would have a match in the G1. You know, maybe start off the tournament or a final match, something like that. I think that they're going to have some plans for Ospreay for that G1, but they're going to have to bring these guys back. And with quarantine, again, that's a real roll of the dice right now with how things have gone. But as you said, they were able to bring Nagata and Kojima. I think for New Japan, some of the rules may not always apply for them in a lot of ways when it comes to quarantining and such like that.
I just want to say this. Drew Parker won the Big Japan Deathmatch title on July 23rd, then on to win the GCW Ultra Violent title one day later in America.
Welcome to America, Drew. Yeah, it's funny because they're already starting to kind of, not to be negative as we end the show, they're already bringing back like mask mandates and things like that because they went away from that for a while. They really hadn't relaxed crap on that.
The UK also recently had their Freedom Day. They celebrated big parties without masks and stuff. We're still not sure how that develops. We're a little bit more hesitant here in Germany, and we'll just look at it from the outside, I guess.
Yeah, because the new variant they have, the Delta variant or whatever, has really hurt America a lot. So they're kind of like, they're going back on some stuff that, you know, they opened up originally and a lot of people thought it was too soon. They did it anyway, and now they're having to close back again, pretty much. So, like, that's already could be a problem. So it's going to be weird how they kind of handle all of this just flux right now that they're in as a promotion. But as we said, like that, when that Chase Owens deal got announced, I was just thinking, man, what is this tournament going to look like? Because if he's in, then to me, who's not in is what I want to, because to me, he is that the wrestling wise, whatever. Like I said, I mean, he's still probably near the bottom. I wouldn't say he's the worst wrestler in New Japan, but in terms of bottom, like, ranking, he's basically the bottom of the barrel of the roster. Like, he's below anybody, I would say. So if he's in, who's out? That's the big question.
Let's look at the lineup.
Let
us look at the lineup. Block A last year. Kota Ibushi, Will Ospreay, Jay White, Okada, Taichi, Jeff Cobb, Tomohiro Ishii, Shingo Takagi, Minoru Suzuki, Yujiro Takahashi. I can see Minoru Suzuki being out.
I think that if Chase is in, how could he be out? Like that's like any of those names you're going to say, that's going to be my reaction. I'm pretty sure.
I know.
It just doesn't make any sense at the end of the day why they would put him in over any of these people. And like I said, it's not like I'm clamoring for Suzuki. He had some good matches last year, he wasn't a standout overall, I would say. It's not like I'm losing sleep.
He has been out before.
That is true. But for Owens, like you know, it's one thing to be out for, like, you know, even a Bad Luck Fale. If he was out for him, that makes some semblance of sense to have a big guy in the tournament.
Look at Block B. Zanada, Evil, Naito, Kenta, Zack Sabre Jr., Tanahashi, Goto, Juice Robinson, Toru Yano, Yoshihashi.
All of those guys will be in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it makes you wonder where they're going with this. The only one that I could see being out would be Yujiro. That's the only candidate, in my opinion.
Yeah. Replacing Yujiro with Chase Owens, yeah, that's what they could do.
And the only reason they would do that is maybe, in their mind, would be to have, like, we don't want to have the same tournament as last year. We always have ins and outs. Mm. And we can't really do any surprises or bring anybody over to our knowledge. Maybe they will have somebody. There's something up the cards of it with AEW.
Maybe they can. Yeah, maybe they can, because All Out is 2 weeks before the G1 starts. So AEW doesn't have a big show around the time, or a big pay-per-view show, that is, around the time that the G1 Climax is going on.
And timing-wise, there's someone on that show that is a champion that some have speculated could be losing his title in the main event of that show. And I think he's coming back at some point. Like, I've had that theory for a while now. Everything they're pointing to, they had a thing where Ibushi tweeted at him at Omega not that long ago. I think he's coming back sooner or later, and I don't think it's later. Like, let me put it that way. If it's not the G1, I think he's having a match at the Dome.
Then also there is the guy Lance Archer holding the United States Heavyweight Championship for the IWGP version. That is, he could be a guy.
You can always call on him, a great worker. You know, he's a guy that the U.S. title's in this weird place anyway, because it's been with Moxley so long that it's like it's basically been this hostage title in America. So who knows if that's going to play into anything. We don't really know their thoughts. That could be something they could always bring over for strong. But I think if they're going to bring somebody from AEW, it's going to be somebody that's a big, big deal. And there's only one person that fits that for a New Japan audience to me. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm advocating for it at all. But, you know, I think that is something that we should keep our eyes out for. Mm-hmm. I think Ospreay's coming back for this Dome show. He's going to be there. Or either that or get announced for the Dome. Or the Dome. Get announced for the G1. And I have my suspicions that Omega's coming back sooner rather than later. Maybe it's not the G1. But I do think the timing is interesting of it this year. It's all kind of fallen into place more than been on purpose.
Yeah, really. Yeah. We'll have to see what is up for New Japan Pro Wrestling after the G1 Climax, because I came across a tweet. I didn't listen to the show, but it was from the Pacific Rim podcast, and Fumi Saito, there, the host of that show, one of the hosts of that show, said that there are plans for the Tokyo Dome to go into construction for improvements after the baseball season in Japan ends, and that is in November. And so there is a possibility that there won't be a New Japan show in the Tokyo Dome on the day it has always happened, Iton Yen, January 4th. So that could be a problem for New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Wow, that's something to look out for on the horizon.
That is.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it, what they're going to do. I think there will be a big show on January 4th, even if it's not in the Dome. I think they're going to do something. They're not just going to say, well, oh, well, boys, pretty much. And it's not like the Tokyo Dome is the only dome that they can run. They're already running one next month, for God's sakes, on there for seemingly no reason. Like, you would think, logically, other than, obviously, like we said at the start, a business decision.
Well,
but Yeah.
Of course, the Saitama Super Arena is always there, too. You can go there, too.
It'll be interesting. That's a long ways off. We don't really know what their plans are. I don't even think they know what their plans are that long. Just maybe they know in terms of booking, like wrestling-wise, but in terms of that stuff, I think they're just kind of waiting to see how the chips fall, because we just don't know what this pandemic is going to be like. Maybe they'll secretly breathe a sigh of relief. Like I said, on this Dome show that we just watched, it felt like they really didn't try at all to make it better. It was like, let's do this and get it over with. That was kind
get
of the vibe.
With.
Yeah, exactly. That was the vibe I got from it. So they might be thinking like, ah, oh, Dome, that we don't have to run one again. Sweet. Like, you know, for all we know, I'm not saying I know that for certain, but I'm saying that is a possibility.
Yeah. So we'll see how this all develops. And from my point of view, I got all the topics in that I had on my list. Is there anything else you want to bring up, Dylan?
Yeah, one thing before we go, I do want to shout out Dragon Gate's Kobe World Show, double show.
Oh, that's
up.
Right.
Yeah, Masato Yoshino retiring in a tag match. Him and Naruki Doi, his longtime Speed Muscle partner, teaming against Eita and BB Hulk on their red team, if you will. You've got KZ going for the title against Shun Skywalker. I'm really interested to see how those shows are going to come out, you know, because I think it's going to be a big deal. Like we know, if you listen to the last week's episode or the episode we did with WH, I know that you're very much wanting KZ to win this title.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm completely with you on that train, my friend. You know, I want KZ to win, too, and I think it'll be a big moment if he did, regardless of clap crowd or whatever. I think it's going to come across like a huge moment. And obviously, the Yoshino retirement is going to be very emotional. Do you have any thoughts on the Kobe World shows?
Yes, I'm really looking forward to Kota Minoura versus Eita in a special singles match. I really want KZ to win this title, and but I'm seeing Yamato looming on the day thereafter in the first title defense at KZS, but they just can't do that to him. They just can't have him win the title and lose it on the next day.
That would be horrible. Like, if that happened, that would be the worst possible outcome, I feel like.
Yes. But except for that, I'm really looking forward to the weekend. The shows, they should really be great. And Yoshino's retirement match, man, it is so perfect. And you know what they should and what they, in my opinion, will do is Naruki Doi for one last time will turn against Masato Yoshino, and they will end the night, or they will end Masato Yoshino's career with one more Naruki Doi versus Masato Yoshino match. After which, they will of course embrace and blow off the entire turn. But that has to happen one more time.
No! That bastard! Turning on him at their retirement. But for the longtime fans, that would I think that would be very, very fun if that happened. To be honest, so I could totally see that happening too.
Yeah,
you know, they do this fake tag team match, and then Doi turns on him, and they say, "No, it can't end this way. Let's fight." And then at the end of it, they end up hugging.
Yes.
And they settle once and for all. No more turns in history. The last turn from Doi, and then Speed Muscle can reunite at the end. I could totally buy that happening. I think that would be a great moment.
Yes, we should definitely talk about these two shows on July 31st and August 1st on here on this show next week. I'm really, really looking forward to those.
Absolutely. Great stuff there. And I love how they bridged one show to the other. They have stuff on the second night that plays off the first night in multiple occasions. Obviously, mentioned the title match, so I really like that. One more thing before we get out of here. Recently, Pro Wrestling Noah solved their tag title situation with Kaito Kiyomiya and Masakita Miya winning the titles over Katsuhiko Nakajima and Manabu Soya. Great match. I really, really enjoyed it. As we talked about on the last show, it's like at the start of this whole feud and rivalry, I was so down on it, like, what? But they're so good at wrestling that now it's definitely elevating itself. It's like, they're making this work. Whatever you want to say about the booking, they made it work. I thought that match totally delivered, and really is something everybody should check out. It's on a random Noah show. I think it's called The Emotion on there.
Yes, Up to Emotion 2021 from July 22nd.
Yes, great match. Highly recommended.
Yeah. So, of course, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/EasternLariat. And except for that, Dylan and I will be back with another show. Definitely still on vacation, so I still have some time, Dylan, and always looking forward to doing shows with you. And of course, once again, want to say that not only was I really happy for all the votes that we received for our half-year awards show, but I was also very, very happy for all the feedback that we've gotten so far for the show. And the feedback is still coming in, which I think is very cool. So I really enjoyed all of this.
Oh, absolutely. That was a great show, I think. I'm glad everybody liked it. And I love doing it, personally. Like, I treasure those kinds of shows. And I kind of mentioned it on my Twitter. What made it really good, I said, I don't think any other show would have this amount of diversity and quantity of different representatives voted for in awards like this. Like I said, I was really happy to see the, you know, because we've done those award shows, even the final awards never had as many votes as this one. So the people really delivered. The fans out there, I love you. You guys are the Eastern Lariat family. I always say it on Patreon, but I extend it to everybody right now that I'm so happy to see the response that everybody liked the show and everybody gave good votes in. And obviously, I thought your picks and WH's picks were all great, good reasoning, and I love the discussion as well on it. It wasn't just like you said something and I said something and we all just moved on. Like, there was a lot of good discussion on it, so I was very happy about that. Much like all of our shows, there's always discussions going on between us. I never feel like I'm going to say something and you're just going to blindly agree with me, and I'm sure you don't feel that way about me. I always feel like we have a lot of great stuff to talk about on these shows, so hopefully everybody's into that. And like you said, patreon.com/EasternLariat. Mia Rob, I mentioned him earlier. I shouted out his article, How I Met Your Pro Res, about Nomura and Izuka. He is going to be joining me for our Stardom 5-Star Grand Prix coverage. Every single match that airs will get covered. Pure star ratings, star rating averages, technical stuff, metric systems, metric points, metric stats. It's all getting used on these. We're going to find out. And it's going to be really cool, too. I'm really looking forward to those shows. Rob is not that familiar with Stardom, so he's going to get a first look at some of these players and these wrestlers.
That should be exciting.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm really looking forward to see what he thinks and our different perspectives on that. That's something I really cherish about this show is that the different perspectives out there. That's something I really love. And I really have to admire you for putting it together and doing such a great job on the Twitter as well. We have that at Eastern Lariat. Follow us. You get cool stuff. You know, sometimes we'll fire back something. Sometimes Strigo troll people, like with that New Japan tweet there. And everyone will enjoy it, especially me.
That is an evergreen tweet now. All right, man. That has been it for this show, for this Eastern Lariat. Let us know what you think about it. And thank you all for listening. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
Worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.